It's always you, isn't it? It's always you showing up.
Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. This week will be a bit shorter than usual as we discuss Bayern's 3-1 win over Hoffenheim in their very first match of 2019, look at the best way to get James Rodriguez integrated back into the starting 11, and talk about Bayern's new top dog in defense. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm joined this week by Tim Richards.
Hello.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
So like I said, Bayern Munich kicked off 2019 on the right note Friday with a solid 3-1 win over Hoffenheim, courtesy of a Leon Goretzka brace and a late insurance goal from Robert Lewandowski. And I want to start by talking about the unique lineup Niko Kovac sent out for the match, because it was a bit different than any of us predicted last week. No one really saw that coming. We had Leon Goretzka at the 10 with Thiago and Javi Martinez behind him, and then Thomas Muller on the right, Kingsley Coman on the left. Sebastian, I want to turn to you. Do you think this was an intentional, kind of a tactical decision by Kovac, or was he just putting out his most fit players?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose if he would have wanted to play Rafinha, he could have done so. And yeah, I think he was quite confident that James was quite able to play. Otherwise, he would not given him so many minutes. So I guess at least those would have been possibilities there. And I would also think that Serge Gnabry would have been an alternative. And I don't think that that has had to do with fitness. I was really kind of surprised because he was going back to what we had seen a lot earlier in the season. More like the funnel kind of midfield with Martinez more at the back. It was a kind of an hybrid there. It was not really completely the funnel kind of formation with Javi Martinez further back and then to eights or tens, however you want to call it. But it was also not a standard double pivot kind of formation. So it really was kind of interesting. So that's why I would think it was on purpose, because it was not just different players. It was also quite deliberately slight changes to the system there. That's why I guess really it should have been deliberate there. Yeah. Maybe Tim has a different opinion there.
The whole thing kind of reminded me a lot of Ancelotti's first game against Leipzig, where for large stretches of the season, he had been playing 4-3-3. He'd been trying to get Müller in the middle. He was trying to incorporate Müller in some way. So this was the first time, I believe, that we had seen Leon Goretzka as a 10. And it obviously worked out quite nicely, like two goals for him. And you'd think, judging from like how he's been playing in consistently for the past few seasons, you'd think that Thiago would be the person that would kind of make everything tick. But strangely, his downfall was this game, or this game was his downfall, rather. Maybe if the roles were turned and Thiago was slightly more advanced and Goretzka was further back, then things would be different. But no, I really like this, and I would say that it was possibly a deliberate choice, because you know, he had, I think he did have Gnabry on the wing and also Alphonso Davies as well, as substitutes. But to play somebody like Müller, who, you know, Kovac is going to be well aware Müller isn't necessarily the strongest winger that Bayern have. The fact that he still did it, it seemed to work out quite nicely. So I think this was a very good decision from him.
Yeah, I'd agree. And one thing I kind of noticed by pushing Leon Goretzka to the 10 and moving Thomas Muller out to the right, it was almost like you had two Thomas Mullers in a way, because we've talked in the past about how Leon Goretzka has that kind of Rumdoiter in him where he pops up in places, he knows where to be, he's just a little bit better probably on the ball, a little bit better as a midfielder. And I think Kovac saw that and knew, you know, the tactical approach that Hoffenheim was going to use, crowd up the middle, really make Bayern come from out wide if they want to. And then he just said, no, you know, I've got two guys who know how to find this space, two guys who can make those runs, pull the defenders apart, and, you know, looking at the results, it obviously worked perfectly. Tim, you talked about Thiago and this not really being his best game. Why do you say that? What went wrong for him in the match?
He gave away possession a lot. Like, Thiago is a player that you can't fault his work ethic or his determination. However, you can fault his execution sometimes. For all the times that he loses the ball, he doesn't give up. He doesn't think, okay, that's a lost cause. I'll just wait to get it back. If he loses it, he'll always run and try to get it back. But at the same time, you know, try not to lose it in the first place. I know that's rich coming from me. I'm not a professional footballer, so I can't fully appreciate how difficult it is. But you can just watch any game of his and you can see this guy is insanely talented. So to see him make very simple mistakes and get dispossessed so frequently in one game is quite shocking. I was watching the highlights just before the call, and the commentator said, "Oh, Thiago dispossessed in midfield. It's not often that we can say that," and it's true. Like he is better than that. But this game was noticeably bad from him, I think.
Well, and I think it's totally fair to criticize him for not holding on to the ball, because out of all the players in Bayern's squad, he's the one player that you would say has the best ball retention. And so if you want somebody to be in those tight spaces in midfield and to kind of hold off defenders, then Thiago's that guy. And I was particularly disappointed because over the break we saw that, I think it was in the Telecom Cup, he was given the captain's armband over guys like Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels. And I think it was Bill that put out a report talking about kind of the new squad hierarchy. And he's like right behind guys like Thomas Müller and now Robert Lewandowski for the captain's armband. So I think for a leader in the squad, you want to see a bit more, I guess, consistency, I would say, because this isn't the first time that we've seen him have a game like this. I mean, it's not even the first time this season that he's had a game like this. And so it's frustrating to watch him go, you know, a couple games where he looks undroppable and, you know, he has to be in the squad. And then we have a game like the Hoffenheim match where you really expect big things from him and expect him to play, you know, kind of that a key role in the midfield, be that glue that holds everything together. And he ends up being the one giving the ball away and letting Hoffenheim start these counterattacks. If you look at Hoffenheim's goal, it was Thiago's bad positioning off the corner kick. And he made the poor decision to come up and then try and stop the ball, and he missed it. Next thing you know, Hoffenheim are on the counter. And so I was really, really disappointed in that. Sebastian, would you agree about Thiago kind of being disappointing on Friday?
Yeah, I have to agree there. I think I have made that point before that I'm not quite happy with him in the double pivot. As I said, we can argue if that actually was a double pivot, a pivot basically, or not. Anyway, I don't like to see him in this kind of position, really. And I want to add, not to be unfair to the guy, but also offensively, he did not shine that much as well. I think it's not his kind of match that we saw this week. Yeah, it was more of a back and forth, not total control, very far, I would think, from the Guardiola kind of football. And I think he thrives the most in the Guardiola kind of football, where you try to dominate the game, where it's 70% possession, where you basically try to not give the opponent the ball at all as much as you can. That's just not the best kind of thing for him. So I think neither was he great offensively, nor was he great defensively. The problem is, what else would we have done in that situation? We have talked about that before. Yeah, if you really want to fix that, I think you need to put Kimmich in the midfield. Or you could have put Goretzka further back this time. But, yeah, that hurts too, I would think. We all enjoyed how Goretzka played on this weekend, so... You really would not want to change that if there is no immediate need for it. So, yeah, it's a bit tough. We have been talking about that, and yeah, as long as we don't have another right back, we want to rely on. We'll have to deal with that kind of thing, and we will have to watch closely what all this means for Goretzka. I think there will not always be a space for him right in the middle, I think, because that's another guy taking minutes from James. I think we all agree that we kind of want to see more of James, so it's going to be tough.
Sebastian, you kind of talked about a change in system that Bayern had on Friday, and Thiago not necessarily being the right man in midfield for that kind of back and forth play that we saw. And you're right, Bayern were definitely a lot quicker in their attacks. They were a lot more direct going towards the goal. If you look at Bayern's second goal, it was like 10 seconds getting the ball from back to front. And I mean, I had to watch the replay like over and over because I could not believe Bayern scored a counterattack that, you know, beautiful to watch. And there was, especially in that first half, it was just a Bayern that we haven't seen in a while with a change of play style. Do you think going forward that kind of style of play, Tim, is a bit more suitable to Bayern, or do you think maybe that's what we should be working toward and a little less toward the possession that's kind of defined Bayern since Louis van Gaal and Guardiola, etc.?
It really depends. Obviously, everything always depends on who the opponent is, mm-hmm. and also who do you have available. So, in my mind, one of the most tactically interesting teams around is Atletico Madrid. They don't necessarily play with wingers. They play with wide midfielders in the form of Koke and Saul, and they are there. They're central midfielders that just play out wide. However, they can play with Thomas Lemar, or very rarely playing with Gelson Martin. So it's, in that sense, Bayern can play. They don't have to rely on speed and pace and energy. So Ribery is still quick-ish, but he's nowhere near as quick as he was. Like he can burst forward, but you can't expect him throughout for 90 minutes. You can expect him like once or twice maybe, but that time, that ship has long sailed. With that being said, you can work the ball up methodically, and with that you can use skill and general footballing intelligence. With players like Kingsley Coman, Serge Gnabry, Alphonso Davies as well, and still to an extent Iron Robin, you can use blistering pace, and you can be very, very quick and just outrun your opponent. So it does depend entirely on who's available and what the team is. If you have a team that's going to attack you, for example, a team like Liverpool, they're going to sit back and wait, then who knows what the right way to do it. Maybe having somebody like Kingsley Coman, who his biggest asset is probably his speed, maybe starting him wouldn't be the right option. Maybe having somebody that's slightly more slightly more technical would make sense, like having Thiago in midfield or even Ribery out wide. It entirely depends on what the opponent's going to do.
I think what you say is quite true, Tim, but I think it's also a bit sad. I think it should not be the case that it all depends on who's injured right now and who are our opponents. I think we should try to develop beyond that at some point. I mean, I can understand that's not always the case with the little crisis that we had back a couple of weeks ago. I can understand that you don't immediately go to that kind of status, but I think that's ultimately what we should try to do again. The other teams really should watch and say, all right, Bayern is coming, what are we going to do to stop them? And not the other way around, really.
Yeah, I would agree with you completely, Sebastian. And I think that's kind of what we were talking about earlier this season when we had some complaints about Kovac. It was that he wasn't, I guess, developing a style of football for the team, and we weren't really making any progress in one direction. And, you know, you would think, for goodness sake, we're Bayern. We don't play based on, you know, what the other teams are, or we don't play a style based on the other teams. They adapt their style to counter what we're going to bring. And so, yeah, it is a bit sad that we're kind of getting to a state where we're almost forced to do the opposite. We're forced to play, I guess I'd call it reactive, more or less. We're forced to adapt based on where we're going or who we're going to face. So, I mean, you're both right. Tim's right that we are to a point where we kind of have to play that way. But Sebastian, I would also agree that that's very non-ideal. Tim, you brought up one player earlier, Kingsley Coman, and if I had to point out another player on Friday who I was a bit disappointed with, it'd probably be him. He did have an assist for Leon Goretzka's first goal, or not really an assist. He had crossed it to Lewandowski, who headed it, and Leon Goretzka put in the rebound. But other than that, I was kind of a little underwhelmed by his final ball, and that's something we've talked about in the chat. You know, he was having really no problem beating his man on most occasions, but too often it felt like to me that he was getting either to the byline and just putting in a wasteful cross or dribbling back out, not really doing anything with the ball. Would you agree, or am I just kind of making, am I seeing something that's not there, or would you agree that he was a bit underwhelming against Hoffenheim?
No, I completely agree with that. Having seen what somebody like Serge Gnabry can bring to a team, he's young. He's probably, I think he is much less experienced than Kingsley Coman, but he just has so much more to offer in terms of going forward, intelligence, vision, passing ability, shooting ability. And he also has the speed to match it up. So physically, I think he can go toe-to-toe with Coman. I think at the moment it's difficult to say he's not good enough, because he's just come back from a very difficult injury. Before that, he had just come back from another difficult injury. This guy's like 23, maybe 22, 23, and has already mentioned the idea, you know, if this happens again, maybe I'll have to think about retirement. It's a scary situation for him. And it is hard not to feel for him. But in terms of his performance the other day, it was just really lacking something, in the same way that, you know, Theo Walcott never fully achieved the same, like, the height that he was supposed to, or Aaron Lennon, these people that can run very, very quickly. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're a good winger. They're good on the wing because they can get past people. But, you know, Usain Bolt is currently playing in Australia. That doesn't necessarily mean that he is the best footballer in the world.
Karim Bellarabi. That's the German example. Karim Bellarabi, and then Sidney Sam to an extent.
Sidney Sam, yeah. Yep.
Oh, Sidney Sam.
I think he even more.
Yeah, those are the two
David
names.
David Adonko.
Those are the two names that came to my mind. So you brought up Serge Gnabry. He didn't start on Friday, which I was a little confused about, other than the lineup, you know, the obvious tactical change from Kovac. I kind of would expect Gnabry to be in the starting 11 over Coman, especially because towards the end of November and into December, Gnabry was arguably our best player, definitely our best attacker going forward. So would you think that he's kind of earned his spot in the starting 11 over Coman, Sebastian?
Yeah, whenever I would have to choose between the two right now, I would choose Gnabry because, as Tim has said, he's more natural goal scorer, and he has just been that bit better in the recent games, I would think. The problem with Coman is he hasn't had the time to play every week and develop. Mm-hmm. He's always just been fighting his way back from injuries, so he basically still has the problems he had when he first came to Bayern, because he never had the time to really consistently work on that. And with Gnabry, I just don't see that major problem with his play. I just don't see anything similar with him, despite him also being injured quite often, not having enough time on the pitch as you would like. But yeah, he's a better goal scorer. He's more natural combination with Goretzka and Müller. I think those three work very well together. And also those three work quite well with Lewandowski. especially Müller, of course, which everyone knows, no matter if he plays on the right side or in the middle. Yeah, I think they are just the more natural kind of combination I would use, if that's the question. But I could also, of course, see both of them on the field. It's not necessarily that it's always only either Gnabry or Coman.
I don't want to get into this too much since we spent a whole lot of time talking about this last week, but do you think kind of the Bayern board has this distrust in Coman based on his injuries and based on maybe what they're seeing out of him? Do you think that's kind of what's leaning into these Hudson-Odoi rumors or the Hudson-Odoi interest that Salihamidžić has confirmed?
I don't think so. I think the board is quite happy with Coman, and I think they are not taking his injury issues too seriously. I think we could see that when Hasan Salihamidžić said that a couple of weeks ago, where he kind of not really made fun of when Coman said he might retire if he gets injured again. It was not that he really made fun of it, but he wasn't taking it all that seriously, I feel. So I don't really think that's the reason.
Fair enough.
I think Bayern aren't, of what I know of Bayern, and as much as I don't like him, I think Uli Hoeneß, to his credit, has always been very supportive of any player that has suffered from like long-term injuries, like physical or mental. I think about Breno and Sebastian Deisler, Alexander Zickler, Willie Sagnol. Willie Sagnol's not the best example because they treat him very poorly. But when they were players, these were people that just had something go wrong for them so regularly. And each time, I can't remember who, but I think it was Zickler who had several problems with his legs years ago, said that because Uli Hoeneß, he retired at such a, considerably younger than other people did because of injuries, they kind of see him as like somebody that's just very patient to say, it's okay, don't worry, you don't have to rush it, like we'll get there. So I don't think Bayern are going to be looking at Kingsley Coman to say, oh, this guy's injury prone, let's just get rid of him. I think chances are they're going to be more patient with him, which is very nice to see. It is that whole mir san mir attitude of we're a family.
Yeah, and we were also talking about the club that's stuck with Franck Ribéry and Arjen Robben for, you know, a decade through countless injury scares and, you know, time
and Bad Stuber as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a very long list of very injury prone players, which is kind of strange. Bayern maybe just really just kind of need to rethink their whole scouting system.
I think that's actually the first prerequisite. Like, whenever someone goes out to scout, they have to see, you know, how much time has that player spent injured? You know, does it meet the requirements? And if so, they can join. But we've talked a little bit about who disappointed us on Friday. Now, I want to look at who impressed you. And obviously, Leon Goretzka, man of the match with two goals. Overall, just a really, really solid display from a position he hasn't even featured in this season. But who else really stood out to you in the match, Sebastian?
Yeah, I think it's time to say something positive about Thomas Müller again. Thomas Müller was really good, and I think not enough people are seeing this so much. When he first had his breakout performances at the World Cup back in that must have been 2010, I think. It was very obvious. Nobody could have not seen how great he was playing back then. But I think the things he's doing for Bayern Munich right now are not quite so easy to grasp. It's not the flashy goals, not even the flashy passes, really. It's the little things he's bringing to the club that not so many others are able to do. Yeah, I was very, very, very happy with his performance. He's getting good grades all over the place, everywhere, basically. I was very happy with that. I was also, I would say, happy with a lot of the defense, not necessarily with every player's performance as a whole, but I was happy with most of the players across the defense. So Alaba, Hummels, Süle, Kimmich, Neuer all played good defense. Not necessarily that I was totally happy with what they brought offensively, but defensively I was quite happy, except for Thiago's mistakes. For a quite long time during this match, I would have said that would have been the best defensive performance of the year or of the season. Yeah, in the end, it did not quite hold, but I think that was quite good.
Yeah, I want to echo on the Thomas Müller real quick, because so many people, whenever they see Thomas Müller on the right wing, just go ahead and write him off. Or a lot of times they just write the match off even. But to look at what he did in the game statistically, and it's rare that you can pull up statistics and it actually speaks to how well Müller played. But he had one assist for Lewandowski's goal, obviously, but he had 5 key passes, a match high. No one was even really that close. He had 11 duels. He won 8. 4 tackles completed. That was a team high, so that shows that he's tracking back, something people always complain about from your wingers. So 4 tackles, 2 block shots. I mean, overall, yeah, I would agree. He was my man of the match, I would say, even with Goretzka's goals. Like, he was just all over the place, cutting inside, doing great work from the right wing. When people talk about him being, I guess, finished as a player, especially when he's out on the right, it's just this match against a good Bundesliga side with a very good coach shows that, you know, he's more than capable of still delivering in a literal way from the right wing. Tim, anyone stood out to you from the match?
Yeah, to echo Sebastian's point, I think this is probably David Alaba's best game in a very long time. He did very well in attack. Like, his pass for Goretzka, I think it was Goretzka's second goal, was perfect. Mm-hmm. He did exactly what a modern fullback is supposed to do. He got forward. He was very quick. He was absolutely rapid. And he was also very solid in defence. I think a number of people, including myself, very, very much thought that Alaba peaked when he was about 22, because he had such a great start to his career. Well, after he went on loan to Hoffenheim, when he came back and was properly part of the starting 11, he was fantastic. And like working with like prime Ribery was glorious to see. It was really, really good. And you were thinking, this guy's just going to get better and better. And then he kind of really didn't. He very much stayed as he was. If anything, he kind of regressed under... I don't want to say he regressed under Ancelotti, because it's hard to gauge just how that went. But this was a really, really refreshing thing to see of somebody like Alaba, who's, you know, oh, is he actually that good? This match kind of showed that, yeah, he is. He is a very, very talented fullback. And the whole season, he's been quietly doing what he's supposed to be doing.
What stood out to me about his performance on Friday, what were his crosses? I think if I had one complaint, not only this season but over the past couple of years, is that he's done really well going forward, but he doesn't put in a good cross often. And then, I mean, his cross for Goretzka's second goal was literally perfect, and then he had others that were really good, so... I hope that's something that he's actively working on and training and trying to get better at, but that was really encouraging for me to see. If I had to give a shout out, it actually would go to Niko Kovac, because I think he deserves a lot of credit for this. Obviously, Bayern would be expected to beat this Hoffenheim side, but he outcoached Julian Nagelsmann, which I was very impressed by, because Nagelsmann's the guy that a lot of people wanted to come to Bayern when it was announced that Heynckes obviously wouldn't be staying, and so many people expect him to be kind of the next big thing in coaching, and I was really happy for Kovac to step up and prove that he can go, you know, toe-to-toe with someone as tactically astute as Nagelsmann. All right, so James Rodriguez made his long-awaited return from injury on Friday. He only played a few minutes in the match, but they were very, very impactful. I think we would all agree, Sebastian hinted at this earlier, that we need to get him back integrated into the squad and need to get him back into the starting 11. at least on a more regular basis. So my question for you guys would be this, and I'll start with you, Sebastian. How exactly do you work James Rodriguez back into the starting 11? Who makes room? Where does he play?
Yeah, that's a very, very tough question. I would think going from the starting 11 from Saturday, I would say the most natural thing to do would be putting Goretzka further back and making room for him that way. That would be my first step. I think I would put Coman on the bench at the start for the next match. Put Gnabry in, put Goretzka further back, and let James play in the middle behind Lewandowski. That, of course, means we would have to change things in the defensive midfield. And I would think I would definitely take Thiago off the field for a match, at least for the start. And yeah, that leaves the question what to do with Javi Martinez. I think he was quite fine. Nothing to complain about with him. I guess we could also have said something nice about him in the last segment. Would not have been a bad idea, I think. Not that he was so obviously great or anything like that, but I think he was quietly doing a good job against Hoffenheim. Yeah, so that's basically what I would do.
I'm usually not the biggest, I guess, proponent for Javi Martinez as a player, but I think the lineup that you present would probably be the best way to work James back in. Because if you pull Goretzka back to the defensive midfield, he's still going to naturally go forward. And so you're going to need a partner beside him who is going to stay back. And then Javi Martinez is obviously that guy who's going to sit back and get stuck in, if you will, and win all those challenges. And he may not be, for me, the best choice, but he's probably the best choice Bayern have available right now. I would agree. If I'm bringing James back in, that's how I'm doing it. Now, I'm assuming you're keeping Müller on the right wing.
Yeah.
You think keeping Müller on the right wing with James in the middle, Gnabry on the left, you think those are all solid positions, or do you think that's something that they kind of weave in and out, kind of switch up with one another?
I would hope the latter would be the case, of course, since I've argued for that the whole season, basically. That's what I would hope for. And I would be curious what that does to James, if he would be able to partake in that, if he would do the same thing, or if that would be difficult for him to immediately join in there. I'm not quite sure, but I would try that.
I guess the counter argument a lot of people would bring up is by doing that you kind of lose a lot of width by having, because Müller's going to cut inside, Gnabry is naturally one to cut inside, but I think by having Javi Martinez in the middle, he can kind of drop back, or he can go cover for either flank, because we know Joshua Kimmich and David Alaba are both at their best mm-hmm. when going forward, and so there's your natural solution for how you get the width. That's how Bayern like to play anyway, with their fullbacks going forward, almost wingbacks even. And I think that'd be a great way to get him in. But maybe, Tim, you have another option for getting James integrated, or do you think that's probably about the best way to do it? Or do you think he's maybe better off on the bench for now?
No, I think you're absolutely spot on. Strangely, I don't have a classic Tim Richards curveball here. That's exactly what I would do. I think for the next game, back line, whatever, right wing, Thomas Müller. I think this is assuming that I think Friday's game was very much like a 4-2-3-1, which was a slight departure from the 4-4-1-1 that Kovac had typically been lining Bayern up as. I'd like to see Bayern go back to 4-4-1-1. I think it's slightly more defensive while still offering quite a lot going forward, and assuming that you have like the right players on the side. I think both Müller and Gnabry are very good going forward, but also they don't mind coming back. Like as you brought up Müller's defensive input the other day, really highlights just how hard he works in all aspects of the pitch. Gnabry under Nagelsmann had played as a wing back several times, so he's obviously talented enough to put in a defensive shift. And in front of Martinez and Goretzka, you'd have James slightly behind Lewandowski, and to have him move from either the left to cover where Serge Gnabry's come in. James is very good at being given as much space as he wants. Like, say, okay, here's the ball, go and do whatever you want with it. Sort of like Thiago. That's how I would line it up. With that being said, Thiago's performance against Hoffenheim shows that nobody should ever have like a guaranteed starting spot. So for as good as James was at for his pass over to Müller, or was it Kimmich? The last pass for the last goal. He also gave away possession several times, despite only being on for like the last 10, 15 minutes or so. So he has a lot of creases to iron out in his game. The debate of Müller or James, like who do you play there? It really isn't as one-sided as people make it out to be, because they both have positives, and as contentious as this may be, both of them have negatives. James is very one-footed. He's not very fast. He is quite a strong player, but there are downsides to his game that I do feel can be facilitated by somebody like Thomas Müller. But assuming this is if I was to pick the team for the next game, that's exactly what I'd go for. James behind Lewandowski, Müller and Gnabry on the wings.
Tim, you brought up an interesting point that we've been talking about in the Slack channel for the past couple of days, and that's the idea that when you bring up James Rodriguez and getting him back in the squad, in most people's minds, it seems to immediately be this debate. Is it, you know, do you want James in the squad or do you want Thomas Müller in the squad? You have to choose between one or the other. How frustrating is that to see? Because obviously, as we saw towards the end of Friday's game, it definitely doesn't have to be one or the other. And we saw last season, I'm thinking of Schalke game in specific. Müller was on the right, James in the middle, Kingsley Coman was on the left. That was one of our best games of the whole entire season. So what do you think about that whole mindset that it basically has to be James or it has to be Müller? There's no way they can work together.
I think the problem is that these are such very, very different players. It's not so much that people only see the possibility that either of them can play, and that's why we have this discussion. It's more like there are the people who love James and there are the people who love Müller. And most of the people who love Thomas Müller hate the kind of things James represents, and people who love James don't like the things Thomas Müller represents. And I think that's why they don't even want to see that there are potential other possibilities, because there are so many fans who either just like the one or the other, which is a bit strange, because I think all of us agree that both are great players. And I think that also includes Garrett. And why wouldn't you, really? I think that it's just what kind of football these people like and what kind of players they like. And yeah, I guess if all those James fans would also like Thomas Müller somewhat, they would be able to come up with possibilities to play both of them. But they just don't want to, I feel.
Here's what confuses me about that. So I guess basically you're saying it's a difference in football philosophies, almost like the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Pep Guardiola would probably love a player like James Rodriguez, or James is kind of the player that would work perfectly in Pep's system, you would think. And so what always confuses me is when people kind of bring up the whole idea of Müller not fitting in the philosophy, is the fact that in Guardiola's final season, you know, Müller was one of the best players, not only at Bayern, but in all of Europe. So he can obviously fit into that kind of system. And so I just think breaking it down into, and I know that you're not doing this, Sebastian, you're just speaking on behalf of others, if you will, but breaking it down into, you know, I like this player because he fits my philosophy. I don't like that player because he doesn't fit my philosophy. He's just, I don't know, kind of foolish, immature almost, if you will, and definitely not indicative of a Bayern fan, but more so a fan of a specific player, if you will.
I guess philosophy is maybe giving the loud minorities here a bit too much credit, now that I think of it. I guess I would not really call it philosophy after what you have said. It's more like, Müller, look at him. He's so thin and his legs and he looks so awkward and that's that. And many other people. I mean, look at James. He looks so young. He's so the beautiful, nice guy without an opinion apart from that he wants to play, and yeah, there's just not much to him in that kind of direction. So yeah, I guess it's really more these silly kind of arguments that are really at the core of that.
I guess that puts me even more in the minority, because if I only could watch one player, it'd probably be Thomas Müller, because I find that, you know, the runs he makes, the way he plays, that's my favorite to watch. Now, I do love James, obviously. I think I've made that clear over the past, you know, episodes that we've had, but I don't know, that argument that it has to be one or the other, just I can't really make sense of it, I guess. Niko Kovac, after Friday's game, declared Niklas Süle the number one center back in defense now. He said that Süle is, he's not necessarily guaranteed, but he's my main man at the heart of defense. He's going to be there leading the defensive line, and Hummels and Boateng are now fighting for that second center back position. Do you agree with this call from Kovac, Tim, and do you think that's, you know, a good move from Kovac?
Yeah, I think it's the right thing to do. Süle's been our best defender. He's got a shout to be one of our best players in general, especially this season. I think he's matured greatly, like rapidly, since when he first joined. Because even when he joined, he was still very good. But he's great. He's really quick. He's like terrifyingly quick. Ridiculously strong. Very good tackling and has a great positional awareness, which is key for a defender. He ticks all of the boxes and beyond anything else is very consistent. So while Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels, okay, they're not very quick, but they're both strong and they can tackle. They can't ever quite fill in the, okay, but have they got this thing? Which Süle does. He has something. Well, he has everything. Hummels and Boateng have most things. I think that's the best way to put it. I completely agree. He is the number one centre back right now.
Sebastian, would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. If anything, I felt like Kovac was a bit late to the party there. We were kind of not only thinking that Süle should be the number one. But I think we all agreed that it was quite obvious that he was also already the number one for Kovac for quite some time now, and that this is not a decision he made last week. He was playing in most of the games, and I think it was quite clear that he had already been the number one. I guess I don't quite understand why he said it, and I don't know in what context he said it. I didn't see a reason why he would have said it now, really. I'm fine with that.
I think it was speaking to journalists and everything after the match, but I would kind of disagree. I'm glad that he said it publicly, because I like to see, you want a manager who's going to step up and not be afraid to say these things, you know, to the media, because Boateng and Hummels are very experienced center backs, and I think every Bayern fan is wanting more out of them based on what they've done this season. And I like Kovac going public and saying, yeah, they haven't been up to standard, and Süle has. So he's the one, you know, though he's only 23 years old, he's the one taking the lead of this defense now. And the other two are competing for the final spot. One thing I also, Tim, you were talking about Süle kind of having everything. There's kind of that saying, like, a good defender you know, doesn't have to touch the ball. He doesn't have to make tackles. He doesn't, you know, a good defender, his positioning is so good that he doesn't have to make big tackles or anything like that. And Sula finished the game on Friday without any tackles. And if you look over the season, he's actually, he's lower in average tackles per game than both players. But that's something I've noticed about him is a lot of times that he's spot on with his defending, and you watch when he goes up against wingers and so many people that when he surprises them with his speed, he just shields them off the ball until they run the ball out of bounds, or he usually ends a match with many more interceptions than he does tackles. I think that he's definitely got that sense of positioning that you brought up spot on. I think he's, you know, he's right there among the best of them when it comes to putting himself in the right place and making, you know, those big interceptions or just kind of forcing someone to the sidelines out of bounds. That's something I've noticed about him that really impresses me. All right, so Bayern play the late game this weekend after playing the earliest game this past weekend. On Sunday, they face Stuttgart, 16th in the Bundesliga, at home. You would think this should be a pretty easy win for Bayern. So what are you hoping for from Niko Kovac in this game? And I'll go and start with you, Sebastian.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if he's going to stick with the new old kind of formation or not. I would hope that we see more of what we wished for last week, but didn't get so much of, which is playing time for the young players. And I hope we will see more of James. Beside that, I hope. Yeah, he sticks with the kind of play style we saw against Hoffenheim. Of course, there's the possibility that Stuttgart will play much more defensively than Hoffenheim did, and then we will have to control the match more than we did against Hoffenheim. But I would hope that we find a way, yeah, to play a similar kind of play style against Stuttgart.
Tim, what are you, I guess, hoping from Kovac?
More goals. Less goals conceded. I don't think there's anything in particular. I'd quite like to see how the team that we were talking about earlier would fare. I'd like to see Gnabry get a good game, because I think he started at the Stuttgart Academy along with Kimmich as well. I'd like to see Gnabry play. I want to see him play full 90 minutes, and I want to see what he can do. Because I do genuinely believe that he is the best winger that Bayern have at the moment. And also, if it's at the Allianz Arena, then let's see Alphonso Davies get a debut. I think from a storytelling point of view, I think it didn't really make sense to have him play for the last 5 minutes against Hoffenheim. He seems like such a nice guy. You want him to have... And like the whole marketing team have been behind him, so you want to have that big moment, your debut for Bayern, was at Bayern's ground. You don't want to be at Hoffenheim's ground for it.
Yeah, I think Davies would be the number one thing for me. And I guess I'm okay if he doesn't play. But sixth, you know, you're facing Stuttgart, 16th in the Bundesliga. Looks like they're going to be without Benjamin Pavard next weekend. He's out with injury, so their defense is going to be weak. I think giving Davies 5, 10, 15 minutes maybe on the pitch would be, you know, the perfect opportunity to welcome him to the Bundesliga, assuming that by that point we're up at least a couple goals, and then clean sheet, obviously. I think I would also give Renato Sanches some minutes in midfield. Thiago was disappointing on Friday, and I don't necessarily think you should drop Javi Martinez, but I don't think he did anything that was to the level where you can't drop him. So If you're going to start James, move Goretzka back, put him with Martinez. But if you're not going to start James, I'd like to see Sanches take the place of Thiago, because earlier in the season he had done so many things that were worthy of a place in the starting 11, and I don't ever feel like he was really rewarded with a solid run of games. So I think as long as Tolisso is out, Sanches should be collecting more and more minutes, because I see him as part of the future of this team, and I'd like to. You know, just the young guys need to get in, and he's one of the players that you would throw in there as a young guy. So that's all the time that we have for today. You can follow us at Twitter, interact with us there at Super Bayern Pod. shoot us an email at superbyronpod@gmail.com. You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever podcast catcher you use. If you look and we're not on there, let us know on Twitter, send us an email, let us know, and we'll do our best to get on there as soon as we can. If you enjoyed us, please leave us a like, leave a rating, review, go out and tell all your friends about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.